Day two of our first workshop on e-cigarettes. I'm Beth Dermowitz from the Center for Tobacco Products, Office of Science. Yesterday, we addressed topics related to product science, specifically device design and characteristics, the chemical constituents of e-liquids and aerosols, and toxicological considerations for these products. Today, we will begin with a public comment session. In order to accommodate the great interest and participation, each presenter will be limited to a three-minute presentation, and we will be using a timer. After a short break, we will move on to sessions on potential performance standards, protective packaging, environmental considerations, and considerations for chemical constituent and hazard labeling. Of note, in order to accommodate speaker travel arrangements, we will have the session on environmental considerations before the session on considerations for labeling. So this is a change in our agenda. We will only have panel discussions following the performance standards and environmental consideration sessions, but we will entertain clarifying questions for all sessions. Dr. Carolyn Dressler will be our moderator again today. Like yesterday, our agenda is full, hence our presenters have been asked to keep their presentations within the time period allotted, and a timer will be used in order to stay on schedule. We will have an hour break for lunch and end the day at 3:30. Please remember to bring all your personal items with you when you leave the room. Similar to yesterday, if you have a clarifying question or a question for the panel, if you're on site, please write your question or questions down on one of the note cards provided and promptly give the card to one of our volunteers in the room. If you are participating by webcast, you can email your questions to our website, our email address for the workshop, which is workshop@fda.hhs.gov. The workshop is being recorded, and the transcript and webcast recordings will be posted on our website when they become available. I'd like to remind you of a few things from yesterday. The purpose of this workshop and the series of workshops is to gather scientific information about this novel category of tobacco products. This workshop is not intended to inform the agency's proposed deeming rule, and we are not looking for advice or consensus, but are interested in an open exchange and discussion of scientific information. We request that all workshop participants be considerate and respectful of all other participants, the information being presented, and the opinions expressed by others. The use of tobacco products is prohibited in FDA-occupied facilities, including the White Oak campus. The policy applies to the use of all tobacco products, including cigarettes, e-cigarettes, cigars, pipes, chew, snuff, and dissolvable tobacco products. We ask that you respect this policy, as violators will be asked to leave the facility. The restrooms can be found out the doors and to the right, and food and beverages will be served and available in the reception area during the break and at lunch. Please note that for any media inquiries, Jennifer Holiski is our press contact, and Jenny's in the same place as yesterday in the back on the right. And I would now like to turn the podium over to Dr. Dressler to begin our open public session.
Good morning and welcome back. For those of you that were not here yesterday, I get a fun job of moderating and keeping everybody on time and working with the questions, etc. So that means keeping on time. So Beth said we will be using this timer, and for those of you that you might be able to see, green, yellow, and red, and on the facing part of it, it says how many minutes or seconds you have. So y'all can't see that, but the speaker can. And know that when it's red, it goes to a negative number, okay? So this is letting everybody know we have a whole bunch of people trying to speak during the public comment session. We do have 2 hours for that. So you will know how over you are, I will know how over you are, and we are going to limit that amount of time, how long you are over, okay? So please, please stay on time so we can be fair to everybody to get through. So with that, I would like to welcome up the first speaker. I know that I see several of the empty seats of the speakers that aren't here yet with traffic or whatever, and we'll add them into the end as they come. So come on up and let's start.
I am not Mr. Lauterbach. I do not have slides, though. Good morning. My name is Gregory Conley, and I am the president of the American Vaping Association, a nonprofit that advocates for small and medium-sized businesses in the vapor market. Thank you for having me today. Before I begin, I must say that watching yesterday's presentation, I was disappointed in the level of scientific discourse displayed by some of the presenters who are anti-harm reduction and anti-vaping, as well as the inability of some independent researchers who have published some of the most significant work in this industry to give full presentations. As an organization, we agree that continued research into vapor products is necessary. We encourage this research. However, as we saw in 2009 when the FDA grossly misled the public of the NRT-like hazards of nitrosamines in e-cigarette cartridges in a study that continues to be used worldwide to justify harsh actions against vapor products, such research becomes incredibly dangerous when it is spun to create the false perception of material harm. The FDA's misrepresentation was one of the first in the United States, but it was surely not the last. Hype and conjecture surrounding e-cigarette toxicity has led us to a place where in 2013, only 60% of the general public said that they believed e-cigarettes were less hazardous than smoking. In 2010, that number was 80%, so 20 percentage points have fallen, and it is not because of a lack of regulation that less people believe e-cigarettes are less hazardous than smoking today. It is because of false claims made by those seeking harsh regulation. Even worse, this research is hazardous from the onset when it's performed by researchers with little or no familiarity with the products and no desire to speak to vapers to determine if their study protocols are proper. At the present time, there is no generally acceptable way of testing e-cigarette vapor like there is cigarette smoke. As such, we find ourselves in a situation where researchers are presenting data on the toxicity of vapor products where they are improperly using the product, with unrealistic device settings that no vapor would actually use. When relying on this evidence and in this new and fast-growing field, the FDA should critically analyze each and every study and just not just assume that passing peer review makes the study automatically acceptable to such an organization. Importantly, we do not encourage more research because we fear that vaping may be more hazardous than smoking. Instead, we want to find out the relative risks of different classes of products, and in the process, we believe that all players involved should keep in mind that the hazards of these products must be compared to cigarettes, not no use of nicotine or tobacco at all. This is what the primary stakeholders in this dialogue, smokers and vapers, deserve, but instead, they are being discouraged by a small group who are using falsely alarming language. In closing, the greatest danger of these sorts of regulations is that the minute risks that we focus on often will actually lead to more smoking than we would have had without such regulation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me here. I'm going to present results from a study that looked at advertising, print advertisements for e-cigarettes. We looked at two different classes of advertisements, implicit and explicit advertisements. And we wanted to see how do young adults, 18 to 25-year-olds, perceive harm perceptions and also their intentions to use e-cigarettes when they see these advertisements for implicit and explicit ads. Now, just to clarify, explicit ads are the ads that name the attributes of comparison, so tell you why e-cigarettes are different from conventional cigarettes, but also highlight the differences. So, for example, smoke-free, spit-free. The implicit ads, on the other hand, they name the attributes of comparison and claim that the product is better than conventional cigarettes or smokeless tobacco without really highlighting differences. So, some examples of similar ads for explicit comparative ads were, for example, blue cigarette print ads, and for implicit one were Mystic cigarette ads, which were clearly showing that use of Mystic e-cigarettes is better. They are a better product than conventional cigarettes, but really not telling you why they were better. The results clearly showed that for 18 to 25-year-olds, and we had about 1,000 non-smokers and non-tobacco users, they perceived the explicit comparative ads to be less harmful, that e-cigarettes were less harmful than regular cigarettes in terms of reducing tobacco addiction, causing tobacco-related disease compared with regular cigarettes, and they also had a higher intention to try the product in the next 6 months. And these were all significant findings. So the conclusion is that e-cigarette ads with descriptors such as spit-free, smoke-free, freedom to smoke anywhere, they lead young adults to believe that e-cigarettes are less harmful than current cigarettes, and they report increased intentions of trying e-cigarettes in the next 6 months. So the implications of the study are, and again I'm just presenting just a small data that was relevant to e-cigarettes, that there's increased scrutiny of e-cigarette ads is required, particularly ads that promote product as superior to conventional cigarettes, and also the necessity of including a warning label on e-cigarette packages and ads. Thank you.
No slides then, okay.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tanvir, Senior Scientist at Fontem Ventures, and the title of my talk is Responsible Practice in E-Vapor Product Stewardship. We've developed a comprehensive stewardship program to evaluate and assess e-vapor products. The program comprises three sections: pre-market product stewardship, batch release, and post-market product stewardship. The focus of this talk will be on pre- and post-market product stewardship. Batch release will be commented on in my colleague's presentation. Risk assessment is undertaken by registered toxicologists for ingredients and materials intended for use in e-vapor products. We use EPA USP standard nicotine and excipients to avoid potential impurities such as TSNAs and diethylene glycol. As a minimum requirement, flavor ingredients are of food grade and no CMRs or respiratory sensitizers are added. Materials which come into direct contact with the consumer, for example the mouthpiece, have been approved for use in contact with food. The quality tests we perform have been guided by existing regulatory frameworks. For example, the EMA guideline on the pharmaceutical quality of nasal and inhalation products and ICH guidelines for stability testing. The potential for the inhalation of metallic components used in the heating element and silica used in the wick is of concern to regulators. We have mitigated this risk by conducting exaggerated extractable testing. The stability of the e-liquid in terms of nicotine content and the identification of leachables have been tested under normal and accelerated conditions. We are aligned with the general consensus that a square wave regime should be used to investigate vapor composition. A 55 mL volume and a 3-second puff duration has been used to benchmark our product to others on the market. To date, the focus has been on nicotine transfer and the quantification of carbonyls. Standard pharmaceutical tools such as the Ames and IVM assays have been used to assess toxicology endpoints in vitro. Fontem continues to monitor the long-term safety and health effects of its products once they are on the market. A dedicated customer service phone line is set up and adverse event data is collected and continuously monitored. A risk management plan and detailed processes are in place in the unlikely event of a product recall. A number of clinical studies are being undertaken over the medium and long term, and these have been registered on clinicaltrials.gov. Biomarker analysis is planned on urine and blood samples from e-vapor users to compare against conventional cigarette users to identify potential perturbations in biochemical pathways. As part of post-market product stewardship, Fontem will continue to use participation in industry meetings and forums to drive improvements and welcomes the opportunity to work with regulators such as the FDA to contribute and shape future product and testing standards. To finish, we believe our approach will provide reassurance to both consumers and regulators on the responsible stewardship and quality of e-vapor products. Thank you for your attention.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to thank the FDA for this two-day forum and for offering this public session, comment session today. My name is Walt Fitzpatrick, and I'm the program manager for Quit Tobacco, You Can Quit Too, the Department of Defense's tobacco cessation counter-marketing campaign. Like so many of us in the tobacco cessation field, I waited patiently and hopefully for the FDA to publish regulation on electronic nicotine delivery systems, commonly referred to as e-cigarettes. While the April 2014 interim regulation provides a framework for ENDS regulation, the FDA took a too conservative approach when it comes to ENDS regulation regarding advertising. The federal court judgment of 2009 allowed the FDA to consider e-cigarettes as a functional equivalent to traditional tobacco cigarettes. The interim ENDS tobacco regulation moves favorably in the direction in some areas, but in my opinion falls somewhat short in the advertising part of the regulation. The 1971 combustible cigarette ads were banned in TV and radio. Reducing public exposure in cigarette marketing helped deglamorize cigarette smoking, reducing the rate of smokers in America. Those cigarettes are still banned from TV and radio today. However, tonight you will be able to flip channels through your TV and find commercials for e-cigarettes hawked by Hollywood stars, and you will likely have heard a radio ad for e-cigarettes during one of your 2 days on your drive here to this forum. A new generation are being bombarded by slick TV and radio ads for e-cigarettes, tempting these consumers to be cool and vape with their friends. If ENDS were only a recreational device, this would not be an issue regarding the marketing of this product, but the truth is in their designation as a nicotine delivery system. By function design and marketing, ENDS are intended to be one thing, to be a tool to create an addiction to nicotine, to slave people to the addiction for nicotine. The federal court has deemed that ENDS can be treated the equivalent of combustible cigarettes, so I asked the FDA to extend this equivalency to TV and radio advertising. As the big three tobacco companies in America have moved to take over the ENDS market, it is clear that big tobacco sees ENDS as their conversion market to dual users and single type vapor users, but they will have one thing in common, a consumer that is relying on the addiction to nicotine to create their market. So thank you for your time.
Good morning. As you're aware, e-cigarettes are becoming increasingly popular. I'm here to talk about the potential environmental impact. A 2014 literature review noted that there had been little to no formal study of the environmental impact of the manufacturing process, use, or disposal of the electronic cigarette parts, despite the fact that many of these products are advertised as green or eco-friendly. Further, an earlier study reported that many of these products do not include instructions for proper disposal. At best, labeling in the industry is very inconsistent. Analysts predict millions could become litter on streets and inappropriately end up in landfills, similar to the amount of litter generated by traditional cigarettes. This will become increasingly problematic as use of electronic cigarettes becomes more widespread. Electronic smoking devices have three main components: a cartridge, which contains nicotine, a vaporization chamber, and a rechargeable lithium battery. The cartridge and battery pose a hazard to the environment if not disposed of properly. The batteries are considered e-waste, which typically cannot be disposed of by local sanitation departments. In some cases, when this e-waste is accepted, it is shipped to poor developing countries, particularly in Africa, where items are broken down and workers are exposed, as well as the surrounding air, land, and water, to toxic chemicals. Lithium batteries are composed of a combination of toxic metals, such as lead, cobalt, and nickel, which tests demonstrated were leaking out in amounts that exceeded state regulatory limits for hazardous products and pose a threat to both the environment and human safety. U.S. Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory has published material warning the public not to dispose of lithium batteries into landfills because of concerns that they may leak hazardous chemicals. Lithium batteries are commonly found in household electronics such as cell phones and laptops. However, the batteries in electronic smoking devices are not designed to last very long, depending on use and brand, and will be disposed of much more frequently than other consumer products. Also, because of their very small size and a lack of awareness regarding the potential dangers of lithium battery disposal, many people will simply throw them away with their regular trash. With the expected increase in sales, this could lead to an environmental crisis. In response to this issue, several electronic cigarette manufacturers have started their own recycling programs. They vary widely. And while a company creating a recycling program is a positive step, it is a small one. First, it's unclear how many customers are aware of these recycling programs. Sometimes information about these programs is hard to find on websites, even when the company has them available. Second, there's no information regarding how many users participate in these type of programs. Will users be willing to save their used products for weeks at a time in order to mail them back when it's far easier and more like the habit most smokers currently engage in with respect to traditional cigarettes to just throw them away? Will they be willing to take multiple steps in some cases to send the cartridge to one place and the battery to another? Third, there are no guarantees that companies that operate these recycling programs will dispose of the products responsibly. In response, there are several steps the FDA can take to address this issue at this stage. More studies need to be conducted regarding the environmental impact of electronic cigarette disposal and user participation in manufacturer-led recycling programs. And the FDA should require all companies to include information about proper disposal on all electronic cigarette packaging. The information should be prominently displayed at the point of sale and company websites. Finally, the FDA should require manufacturers to take additional steps to educate the public on the hazards associated with improper disposal through educational material and awareness campaigns. These steps taken now can help address the large environmental problem before it becomes a true crisis. Thank you.
Hi, my name is James Seeger. My company is eFlowTech Research. I'd like to thank FDA and the CTP for allowing me the opportunity to speak. I am a one-man band small manufacturing company that's just starting up. I have pared my comments down to a few things I did not hear discussed yesterday. First of all, advanced vaping equipment. Often, as advanced users progress through the devices from the starter e-cigs, within a period of 1 to 2 years, they often wind up with much more advanced devices. I have one of these with me. If anybody'd like to take a look at it, they're welcome to approach me. I'll show it to them after. These devices, the one that I have with me, flows approximately 950% more air than the standard RTA, rebuildable tank device. This is an RDA, a rebuildable dripping device. These are so efficient that the users typically are using these devices at no more than 6 milligrams of nicotine, because they're so effective at delivering them. The other difference is that the more air-restricted RTA devices require the user to take a mouth to lung hit. This was not discussed yesterday. So they first draw it into their mouth because it's so restrictive on airflow, then they pull it into their lung, making it less effective on nicotine delivery, and I did not hear that discussed as far as being compensated for in the puff simulation models. These advanced RDAs, they take a direct lung hit. It's high velocity directly into the lung. Another item I didn't hear discussed yesterday is I'm aware of approximately 100 known e-liquids, additives, and flavorings that cause a breakdown of polycarbonate, which is commonly used in the manufacture of these devices, the tanks and whatnot. And that breakdown of the polycarbonate could possibly introduce additional toxins to the vapor. So I'd like to hear more research on that. As a small manufacturer, I would like better access to research. I can't afford to click on a link and spend $60, $100 to read a paper that may or may not be pertinent to what I'm trying to discover. So that would be fantastic. The last thing I want to comment on is clones and counterfeit materials. The RDA I have with me is a clone. It says made in USA in bold letters on the bottom. It is not. It's made in China. It was $10. The insulator was made out of improper plastic. I don't know what kind, but it melted. It failed. It caused a battery short. I replaced it with an Altem insulator. These clones look the same, but they do not perform the same. They're made out of subpar equipment. They clone the e-juice, too. You know, American manufacturers are going to great lengths to make sure they're trying to provide a safe product. And you can go on madeinchina.com and punch in FDA-approved e-juice, and you'll get a bunch of hits. And they claim FDA approval. They also show forged FDA certificates. So that, in my opinion, is a grave danger that we face right now, and I am very concerned with the potential risk for DEG contamination because anybody can order any of the basic, you know, ingredients directly to their house right from China, and there's no reason to trust the USP certificates, due to their track record.
Slide. Are you going to use five?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
Good morning. My name is Sean Gore. I'm the chairman of the Oklahoma Vapors Advocacy League, or OVAL for short. Do e-cigarettes help smokers quit? Data shows pharmaceutical cessation products promoted by our health agencies only have a 3% to 9% success rate. 60% are more likely to succeed using e-cigarettes or vaporizers. Recent study done by credentialed experts in Oklahoma indicates that a majority of vape store customers are exclusive e-cigarette users at 64% and not dual users. Vaping does not present a health threat to bystanders. Peer-reviewed research, a study called Peering Through the Mist, done at Drexel University, reviewed more than 9,000 cases of e-cigarette usage and closely analyzed the vapor and liquids inside the devices. They concluded that the health risks were too low to be of concern for both puffers and people in their vicinity. Another study called the Clearstream Air Study, conducted by Dr. Farsalinos, concluded that it would be more unhealthy to breathe the air in big cities compared to staying in the same room with someone who is vaping. Research shows e-cigarettes are vastly safer than smoking and pose no second-hand risk to bystanders. Smoking bans have largely been justified because of the risk posed to others by environmental tobacco smoke. Studies show e-cigarettes have no side stream smoke. Evidence also demonstrates e-cigarettes are not a gateway to smoking. Research is not finding e-cigarettes to be a gateway to smoking. In fact, it didn't seem as though it really proved to be a gateway to anything, says Theodore Wagner, Ph.D., Assistant Professor of General Community and Pediatrics at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center, after surveying 1,300 college students. Another study conducted at Harvard titled E-Cigarettes, Not Gateway to Smoking, shows that if anything, e-cigarettes are a gateway away from smoking. E-cigarettes in perspective. For about 20% of smokers, none of the traditional methods of quitting work at all. They will lose years and possibly their lives due to smoking. According to the CDC, 480,000 Americans are projected to die from smoking this year. So we should keep our response to e-cigarettes in perspective and regulate as if the 500,000 lives matter the most and not the money. So that leaves me with one last statement and a question. E-cigarettes are without a doubt the largest step forward in tobacco harm reduction we've seen in the last 50 years. So why are the FDA and CDC-funded scientists falsely misrepresenting the data? Just for short, this is my daughter's, four-year-old daughter's, Orajel training toothpaste. The three main ingredients, propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavoring. Three of the main ingredients in e-liquids. Thank you.
I'm here today as the head of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs at Ploom Incorporated of San Francisco. In the course of my three-minute talk, three smokers will die unnecessarily. That is the reality of today. We wish first to comment that the field of vaporization includes a heterogeneous range of products. We believe that these rapidly evolving innovative products, especially innovation in devices, is to the benefit of the consumer if the devices meet appropriate quality and vapor testing standards, which may not necessarily require pre-market authorization. Even yesterday, we saw data being presented to FDA to guide future regulation from device platforms which are already several generations behind and, frankly, obsolete. If FDA is able to incorporate a continuum of risk approach to regulation of vaporization products, as it has expressed an interest in doing, there is a great deal that may be accomplished. While we recognize the history that has led us to the regulation of tobacco, it is critical to continue an open dialogue with all interested parties. Over the past several months, I've been at eight separate meetings like this, including FDLI, TMA, and Morvan. A key takeaway for me is that government, industry, and public health organizations do have shared goals and interests that may be accomplished through effectively targeted regulation. Ploom, my company, has invented and launched two unique vaporization platforms to date that heat tobacco leaf without burning it. Key assessments of toxicology and product performance have been executed, and we refer FDA and stakeholders to Ploom's comments in submission number 0189- 79992, and wish those entered into the record. These data show that heating tobacco leaf through one of our platforms produces a vapor chemistry that is consistent with being less toxicologically harmful than conventional combusted cigarettes, which is important in the consideration of relative risk. In that testing, no significant increase above the negative control and no dose response was observed in the Ames Salmonella mutagenicity assay, the neutral red uptake cytotoxicity assay, nor the micronucleus assay. Also, there was no carbon monoxide emitted, which is relevant in light of the comments of the delegate from the American Heart Association yesterday, who indicated that CO from cigarettes plays a causal and contributory role to cardiovascular harm. The HA also stated that dual use may not reduce harm. Therefore, it is incumbent that future vaporized products be allowed to become sufficiently attractive to serve as a viable harm-reduced alternative to cigarettes that will enable smokers to completely transition, not partially transition, completely transition from combustion to vaporization. We also call on the FDA to consider imposing a standard that all pipes and hookah be carbon monoxide free, because that is possible with the technology of today, right now. The same tobacco advice has to change. That's all that needs to happen. It's very easy. In summary, we at Ploom wish to productively engage with FDA so we can do the right things for our customers and for the broader public health. We welcome responsible standards and oversight that we hope and trust that this process will bring. We wish to thank the FDA and Director Zeller for engaging in an evidence-based and intellectually honest discussion to find the best path forward, which is appropriate for the protection of the public health. We thank you for your consideration.
Hello, my name is Link Williams. I'm the Secretary of the Board for AMSA, the American E-Liquid Manufacturing Standards Association, as well as the Executive Vice President of NICVAPE, which is an e-liquid manufacturer out of Spartanburg, South Carolina. I had planned this wonderful speech to tell people my personal story, but if you've ever been to one of these things before, everybody's heard that story of the transformation within my life. So instead, I'd like to talk a little bit, Frank, about what yesterday was like, and extend an offer out to everyone in the room. So yesterday was one, first it was a little invigorating, because 3 years ago the discussion was entirely about there was no science on these products, that they were entirely an unknown, that they were a fad, and that they were going to go away. And yesterday we started to hear public health experts, as well as everybody across various industries and interests, actually come out and say, you know what, there is no doubt that they are less harmful than tobacco cigarettes. So for me as a consumer, as well as in the industry, that's a very refreshing thing to see. The other thing that came up to note was the reliance on data that is 5 to 7 years old. The presentations we saw yesterday either unintentionally or intentionally chose to use data that is completely out of date and then based on technology that's not even really used inside of the consumer industry anymore. The other thing that was evidently clear is that there is still a clear lack of knowledge on how these products are actually used and what their performance capabilities and features are. So that gets to my second portion of it. Well, we've extended this out in the past, and I extend it out again. Any organization that would like to know how these products are actually used from the users and the manufacturers, we welcome you to contact us, to talk to us, okay? Because how these devices are used and how users currently configure them, which changes almost every month, is extremely important in understanding how to test these devices. So I extend that offer out to anybody from any organization to reach out to us, and we would be more than happy to help educate that process and truly understand it. Thank you.
Many smokers found out early on what was on the market at the time was not successful in helping them switch from tobacco. They innovated on what was available and produced the refillable tank systems and e-liquid into what has become representative of the small business owners you see today in vape shops. They have created countless jobs and even more success stories across this evolution. I believe it's imperative that you hear the numbers that have resulted due to this innovation and diligence. We recently sent out an anonymous survey through a third party to thousands, and this is the result of that survey, which there are copies in the hall. Out of 2,049 respondents, 66% are over the age of 31. Only 14% were able to switch using a cartomizer type e-cig. If flavors were reduced to tobacco alone or tank systems were removed, 53 to 55% would go back to smoking. Or they would find another avenue, and a staggering 94.9% no longer use cigarettes and use an e-cigarette exclusively. That is the result of the hard work and diligence we've done as small business owners. Cigarette innovation is unlikely, but vapor products hold the promise to harm reduction through innovation. As a small business owner in the vapor industry, we now have 8 locations and an independent mixing lab that is diligent in using safe manufacturing processes, testing, safe labeling and packaging, and know the process of due diligence and practical safe manufacturing can be done within a small business. We've also seen the results of this process and the impact it has made on our customers, and know that it will help them switch successfully versus what has been offered in the past. What electronic cigarettes are to the industry and to the customers we see every day are nothing short of a miracle to them. What you may see as data and statistics, they see as a change of life and a necessary means of harm reduction. But it cannot continue its rate of success if we go backwards in innovation. How can we be wrong when the survey numbers reflect all of what we are doing right? Based on these numbers, if we don't come to a solution for manufacturing versus removal or absence of open systems or flavors, 55% will go back to smoking cigarettes, and all of our hard work will be for nothing. I hope that you will consider these numbers and the impact that they've made to parents, grandparents, children, and grandchildren across this nation. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Scott Ely. I'm with NICWID. I'm also the Vice President of the American E-Liquid Manufacturing Standards Association. I want to thank the FDA for the workshop and public comment period. I encourage the agency to have more public comments opportunities given the extremely high interest in electronic cigarettes and vapor products. As stated during the public workshop, initial studies are showing that vapor products are more successful in transitioning a user's dependence on combustible tobacco than prescription medications or NRT products. The scientific and empirical evidence has consistently found that e-cigarettes have replaced more than 3 billion packs of cigarettes worldwide in the past 7 years, have helped several million smokers quit smoking or reduce their cigarette consumption, are more effective than FDA-approved NRT smoking cessation products, which have an 84 to 95% failure rate, pose fewer risks than FDA-approved Chantix, have never been found to be a gateway to smoking cigarette smoking, emit trace levels of non-toxic aerosol that pose no harm to non-users, and have further denormalized cigarette smoking as youth and adult smoking rates and cigarette consumption have declined every year since 2007 when vapor sales began to skyrocket. I very strongly encourage the FDA to reevaluate the currently intended application of $275 million set aside for e-cig and vapor product research. Youth experimentation is common with many substances. The CDC survey of youth Ever Try misrepresented data by including those who indicated they would consider trying and those who have merely tried the products under the category as user of the products. And year-over-year data indicated the only increases were amongst those identifying themselves as smokers. Resources targeted to build a virtual convenience store targeting 13 to 17-year-olds to assess how e-cigarette displays and pricing affect the tendencies of minors to buy the devices could better be spent on verifiable and scrutinized real science, especially considered that 41 states already have laws banning the sale to minors and many other states have bills planned in 2015. $2.7 million the agency gave to a group to monitor Facebook posts to determine how people modify devices is also wasteful, as the results would be outdated before the study even concludes. Verifiable and professional scrutinized
through the process of peer review and publication should be the policy for all research, including any and all funded by the FDA and taxpayer. I and millions of other former smokers around the world embrace these alternatives while tobacco cigarette sales are simultaneously falling. We all agree reasonable, realistic, and sustainable regulations are needed to establish consumer protections and good product stewardship, but without devastating a multi-billion dollar industry and or eliminating viable and effective options for both current consumers and current smokers. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Riccardo Polosa. I'm professor of medicine at the Catania University in Italy, and I declare this conflict of interest. But first and foremost, I'm a doctor who engaged with real smokers and real patients with smoking-related conditions. My research team has been performing clinical behavioral research with electronic cigarettes since 2009, and has published more than 20 peer-reviewed articles on the topic. My purpose in being here is to highlight a few recent key observations that FDA officials may consider in their effort towards a sensible regulation. In the UK, but also in France, as well as in the US, where electronic cigarettes have been allowed to be marketed as a consumer product, substantial health benefits have been observed. Most important of all, smoking prevalence has declined. Unquestionably, electronic cigarettes are not renormalizing tobacco smoking in countries where a liberal approach towards these products has been adopted. Systematic reviews and meta-analysis now suggest a strong positive association between electronic cigarette use and smoking abstinence, with an average quit rate of about 20%. This is a collateral benefit for many smokers switching to electronic cigarette use. Please note here that up to two-thirds of smokers who successfully quit tobacco by switching may end up quitting electronic cigarette as well. This has been little studied in current surveys especially, but it is an additional mechanism by which electronic cigarettes may contribute to the observed decline in smoking prevalence. Emission data indicates that electronic cigarette toxicology is by far less problematic than combustibles. This favorable profile has been also recently confirmed in the urine of regular single users compared to smokers. Much of the current research unfortunately focuses on the potential harm of these products, when in fact there is emerging evidence pointing to the beneficial effects of electronic cigarette use, both in health and in disease. For example, inviting smokers with elevated systolic blood pressure to switch to electronic cigarette can substantially reduce their blood pressure. Further evidence for harm reversal is coming from asthmatic smokers. Regular electronic cigarette use and subject asthma outcomes. This is the last one. I don't think it needs to be a daunting task after all, but we should focus on quality, safety product standards, and carefully monitoring of smoking prevalence nationwide. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Andy Robotham. I'm a member of the management team responsible for the manufacture of electronic vapor products, or EVP, at Fontaine Ventures. At Fontaine, we believe we bring lots of things to the EVP sector, with the most important of these being quality, responsibility, and integrity. This is a time of change, where the medical community increasingly seems to be reaching consensus that not only are EVPs relatively safe, but they could also present potential health benefits to migrating smokers. We believe that during this time of change, quality will become the single most important development in the industry, and that regulation must help to establish the quality standards which guide EVP manufacturers' activities and protect the consumer. We've been leading the calls for standards and for fair and proportionate regulation so that we can educate the interested user and as safely as possible deliver the experience that they deserve. Today, we want to explain the quality manufacturing approach we use for our products so as to give you an overview of the kind of requirements and standards which could be applied across the board. Our manufacturers operate far and above the minimal standards in which many EVP products are made today. We consider this as an obligation to the user, not a choice of the manufacturer. Fontaine's total quality manufacturing approach encompasses our whole business. Business quality ensures we have a reliable, sustainable, and secure environment without the risk presented by unacceptable business practices. Manufacturing quality ensures that product manufacture takes place under strict controls with high levels of component incoming quality control, standard operating procedures, on-the-line supervision, and finally the routine testing of every device. Liquid manufacture using European pharmacopeia nicotine and excipients sourced from reputable suppliers is done in clean room type conditions in our UK manufacturing facility. And product quality ensures that our products are designed and manufactured to the stringent requirements we believe our consumers deserve. We chose an FDA-inspected ISO 13485 certified manufacturer of medical devices in China to make our devices. Mixing, filling and packing is carried out in the UK, where we currently operate in a facility certified by the MHRA. The products we manufacture in these suppliers are specified to high safety standards. Quality specialists and scientists mandate our quality testing requirements through manufacturing service agreements, associated technical agreements with our suppliers. The testing regimes and procedures, such as those you see on the screen, ensure that every batch is tested before being released onto the market. Our vision for the future and for future regulation would be as follows. Automation will further enhance product quality through increased consistency and improved hygiene. Food-safe coatings and child-resistant packaging will be standard when a risk assessment shows they're required. Automated testing will ensure that all products work without leaking or overheating and produce an acceptable vapor. Products will be traceable back to component level. At Fontaine, we believe the manufacturing standards I've talked about should be applied across the global supply chain. We hope this short insight into the Fontaine total quality manufacturing philosophy illustrates what we mean by quality, responsibility, and integrity.
So good morning, everybody. My name is Ralf Zimmermann. I'm coming from Rostock University, and we are doing their research on online measurement of tobacco devices. And also, we have a spin-off company who is building measurement devices for that purpose. So our technique involves photoionization mass spectrometry to online and puff resolved measured the compounds, toxicants from cigarettes, but also e-cigarettes and heat-not-burn devices. And we think that the smoking behavior, so the actual puff profile, is very important to address the specific effects here. So online measurement, I think, matters. The smoking device design and the manipulation of the devices can also very well addressed by this technology. So we use light to ionize and have soft ionization so we can see the profiles of the toxicant directly online, which of course allows us to compare different devices. You can see just a glimpse of different cigarettes, a conventional cigarette and a heat-not-burn device and an e-cigarette. And in the higher in the higher mass range where we have the toxicants, we have a very clean spectra here for these typical e-cigarette type. So the risk seems to be very, very much lower by orders of magnitude if you consider the toxicants of these compounds. And of course, we can do the measurement then online, so puff by puff. And this is very much dependent on the actual puff profile. So we have to consider that for regulation, that we see the real smoking conditions, how these compounds are formed, because it makes a big difference. If we now look at different devices, we can see, in this case for nicotine, that we have a different behavior of release. If we have a charcoal-heated, heat-not-burn device, we have this bell-shaped release curve, so each peak is a concentration of nicotine here. E-cigarettes have constant release, but normal cigarettes typically have a linear increasing behavior. And some vendors now try to copy these, and they have like a pot heat-not-burn device, so they try to mimic this behavior release, so to have the same feeling with like with e-cigarettes. So it's very important to have the puff results information here within this type of devices. And another important point is, depending on the smoking conditions, we can measure toxicants, like here polyaromatic compounds in e-cigarette smoke. And depending on the conditions, it can happen that we have PIH formation to pyrolysis, which we can then see here puff by puff, as well like with the nicotine. I would like to summary. The important point is that more research is also available for small companies and universities to look at these effects under more realistic conditions. Don't let us do the same mistake like with ISO profiles, which say nothing about the real risk of cigarettes, because it's underestimate the risk by far. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity for the Tobacco Control Legal Consortium to offer public comments here today. While the Legal Consortium is concerned about a variety of different policy issues related to the regulation of e-cigarettes, including flavors, warnings, advertising, and youth access, today we'll focus on child-resistant packaging for liquid nicotine. As we all know, the electronic cigarette marketing or market is expanding greatly and changing also, as you've heard from several people today. One of the consequences is we're seeing more of the refillable products and also then more of the liquid nicotine that's used to refill those products available in a variety of different sizes of products and different levels of nicotine. We know and have known for a long time that nicotine can be deadly. It can cause illness. The threshold for consumption of nicotine is not exactly known, but somewhere between 1 and 3 milligrams of nicotine per 1 kilogram of body weight. That might not really make sense to anybody, but let me put it in real people terms. My granddaughter's 17 months old. She weighs 20 pounds. If she were to ingest a vial of sweet cherry flavored liquid nicotine in the traditional size that you can find, she would assuredly become very ill and could in fact die. In fact, just yesterday in Fort Plain, New York, a child died after ingesting liquid nicotine. So this is a real problem. We're seeing escalating reports to poison control centers around the country from children, young people ingesting the liquid nicotine. In 2011, about 270 calls to poison control centers. Already in 2014, over 3,300 of these calls. So the problem is real. The question is, what's the solution? Many states have considered legislation that would impose child-resistant packaging. Minnesota, Illinois, and Vermont have done so, but we all know that the comprehensive federal approach for this particular issue will be better. What could the FDA do? First, the FDA could adopt a product standard under Section 907A3, imposing child-resistant packaging. That's a lengthy regulatory process. We understand that. But certainly the FDA has done that with other products, over-the-counter medications and the like. And so there's a history and the capacity to do that in collaboration and using the resources of the CPSC to help in that regard. The other thing that the FDA could do, however, is when implementing the deeming regulation, they've indicated that they're going to give a 24-month window for new product applications to be filed while the product can still be marketed. That will apply to electronic cigarettes. That could simply be amended and allow only the products that meet child-resistant packaging standards to be marketed during that 24-month window. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jack Marshall. I'm the Director of Communications and Training at Altria Client Services. Our team provides regulatory support on behalf of a number of our operating companies, including Newmark. As my colleague, Dr. Flora, mentioned yesterday, Newmark markets e-vapor products in the United States under the brand name MarkTen. Earlier this year, Newmark acquired Green Smoke and its Green Smoke e-vapor brand. We appreciate CTP organizing this workshop and providing a constructive forum in which industry, academic researchers, and FDA can share information on the important scientific issues related to electronic cigarettes. In addition to our participation at this workshop, we look forward to participating in the subsequent workshops that CTP has said it will hold on the individual and population health effects of e-cigarettes. Each of these workshops can help contribute to a transparent and science and evidence-based discussion about the importance of a comprehensive tobacco harm reduction strategy. At Altria, our framework for tobacco harm reduction has many facets, including communicating tobacco health effects, supporting underage tobacco prevention, and providing cessation support to help adults who make the decision to quit. It also includes developing potentially lower risk products. As manufacturers of tobacco products for adult consumers, it's important that we continue to understand evolving consumer expectations. Our data shows that greater than 50% of current smokers are seeking alternative tobacco products. And most within that 50% are not necessarily interested in traditional moist smokeless tobacco products. It's this adult consumer interest and feedback that informs our product development efforts. To achieve tobacco harm reduction, any potentially lower risk products must be acceptable to adult tobacco consumers. It's important for this harm reduction strategy to focus on creating and recognizing innovative products that can reduce harm for smokers. E-vapor products, which have grown considerably over the last few years and have been the topic of this workshop, are a good example of this kind of innovation. A few months ago, FDA proposed its deeming regulations to pull in most other forms of tobacco products under its regulatory authority, including e-vapor products. In doing so, FDA recognized the potential of harm reduction and the concept of a continuum of risk. To the extent FDA can implement a comprehensive tobacco harm reduction strategy, it will be among the most effective and meaningful actions FDA can take to reduce the health effects of tobacco use. We hope to continue working collaboratively with members of the public health community and FDA to achieve tobacco harm reduction over time. Workshops like the one taking place here are an important part of that process. Thank you.
Brilliant, thanks. Good morning. So I'm a very unlikely presenter because up until 2 years ago I had no idea about any of these things. But I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist at McLean Hospital. I treat very self-destructive adolescents. That's almost tautological. But the three things got me here. One was the observation that increasing or ongoing numbers of adolescents were coming in with smoking. And the other thing was that my godfather died of lung cancer. But the thing that got me was when my cross-country running son brought home a pack of electronic cigarettes and regular cigarettes that he wanted, that his friends had asked him to hold for him so that they wouldn't be caught. So I got to start thinking about this, and and then found these the data online that 3,200 kids try cigarettes every day, and that 2,100 regular smoker people who smoke occasionally become regular smokers. So on our unit, we were trying to use lozenges and gum to stop people from smoking, and generally the adolescents would tell you what you could do with those lozenges and gum, and I said, well, that's not really the way that they're supposed to be used. But they were interested in electronic cigarettes, and which was sort of interesting to me. So I thought, okay, well, in terms of a harm reductionist, and I was just thinking about the many small companies that are trying to bring their ideas, that if we allowed electronic cigarettes and these sort of things to be more regulated than traditional tobacco products, that it would hand big tobacco a huge victory because they've got such massive resources compared to a lot of the small companies. And again, hand them these 3,200 smokers a day that could potentially, that aren't interested in gum and other things like that. So, you know, obviously everybody's been saying this, and you know, the other thing is with advertising and sales, it really ought to be regulated in terms of selling to people under 18. So what I think from my perspective is just that, again, the quality of the product, I mean, I think a lot of people cut costs and then you get all these sort of studies that show that there's 10 times more carcinogens. I think that these that really need to be regulated. Testing must be done for content. And the FDA should be very explicit about advertising to minors. And I leave you with this thought experiment, and I'm a father of four adolescents, and that's why I'm here, because I ran away from them. But anyway, but if that 16-year-old son of mine were to be smoking, I would want him smoking a well-regulated electronic cigarette rather than a cigarette each and every time. And if this were your children, you know, and you were caught with this, you know, what would you do? So, thank you.
Good morning, folks. First, a small correction. Actually, my affiliations are on the slide now, not from the previous introduction, so there's been a slight substitution in the program. So what I'd like to talk to you about today very briefly is that there's really not that much new about e-cigarettes. I don't come from tobacco control world. I come from a very different area of academia and research, and I was surprised that so many things about electronic cigarettes were surprising to people. So that's my story. So we're really not all that ignorant about toxicology of what comes out of electronic cigarette, and I talk about it as somebody who's trained in industrial hygiene, environmental health, who was taught to anticipate what would happen if my workplace had a source of environmental emission introduced to it that was very much like electronic cigarette, and it was there, and it was exposing me. And I was trained through my undergraduate and my graduate training to recognize and deal with those situations, and be able to make rational decisions about mitigating risks for myself and my coworkers and my colleagues. So we have rich experience from other areas of environmental and workplace emission controls and hazard assessment that are incredibly helpful and can be easily applied and portable to the world of electronic cigarettes and tobacco products. And there's really no reason to assume this precautionary posture that it really amounts to willful ignorance. We really know a lot more than we should give ourselves, than we sometimes give ourselves credit to. And my cred, such as it is summarized in this paper, and if you're really interested in what I have to say on this topic, it's all published out there. You're most welcome to contact me. I'm easily found. But this is my main point, which was made yesterday as well. Those makes the poison. We knew that for a very, very long time, and it's really not helpful for us to think otherwise, because nothing really has changed into the truth of that statement since Paracelsus put it forward. And this is part of the story. If we apply standards that are admissible in workplaces to emissions from electronic cigarettes, and we look at about 9,000 chemical measurements that were available to me back last summer, we can see that across chemicals, we see individual exposures that are way below a threshold where we would actually begin to worry about them. There's really no reason to be concerned here. Most of them are in trace quantities. They're present, but they're not going to hurt you. And if you look at the similar calculations based on emissions from vapors, you can reach the same conclusion. You can sit on stand near vapor and experience their side stream emissions, and you should not be worried or afraid for your life or health. So we do know a great deal about electronic cigarettes. If the word cigarettes was not in the title, we wouldn't really be that worried about them, because it's just a name. It's not really appropriate to deal with these things as if we learned nothing since the 16th century. Scientists don't run away from vials of chemicals, and neither should public. We should understand them and treat them with respect, but we should not be afraid of them. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. COPD is short for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's an umbrella term that's used to describe progressive lung disease. It includes emphysema, chronic bronchitis, refractory asthma, and severe bronchiectasis. And it's most often associated with tobacco smoking. The COPD Foundation is a not-for-profit organization established to undertake initiatives that result in expanded services for COPD and improve the lives of individuals affected by COPD. Our activities focus on achieving these results through research, education, and advocacy programs. I am Miriam O'Day, and I have no conflict of interest. I am a consultant to the COPD Foundation. The growing popularity of electronic cigarettes is a cause for concern to the COPD Foundation. We don't know whether e-cigarettes have an overall positive or negative impact on public health. It's been claimed that e-cigarettes offer a healthier alternative to conventional cigarettes and can help smokers overcome addiction. However, they pose risks of their own, such as poisoning, and we've heard much of that today. According to the CDC, the calls to poison centers have increased significantly from about one per month in 2010 to about 215 per month in 2014. There is also the possibility that e-cigarettes in people with existing lung disease. Understanding the impact of secondhand smoke and the exposure to vaping or vapor, we want the focus on minors, the enforcement of sales restrictions to minors to be very tight, to create stricter regulations for marketing, to limit the use of flavors, and to control labeling. So thank you very much for your allowing us to make comments today.
Thank you. My name is Joel Nitzkin. I'm a public health physician. My travel here is supported by the R Street Institute. The opinions I express here are entirely my own and have not been reviewed or influenced in any way by R Street, the American Association of Public Health Physicians, or any other organizations I am or have been affiliated with. My presentation today is based on the chemical similarity of e-cigarette fluid and the pharmaceutical nicotine replacement therapy products, the patches, gums, lozenges, nasal sprays, and inhalers. FDA considers these products safe for general use without restriction as to dose or duration of use. With FDA approval, they are sold on open shelves in a variety of fruit and candy flavors. I urge CTP, the Center for Tobacco Products, and TPSAC, consideration of tobacco harm reduction. This topic fits today's agenda as well as it fits the agendas of the next two FDA e-cigarette workshops. Tobacco harm reduction means informing smokers that they can reduce their risk of potentially fatal tobacco-related illness by 90% or more by switching from cigarettes to a smokeless or vapor alternative, or by using a pharmaceutical nicotine replacement therapy product on a long-term basis in a harm reduction mode. A tobacco harm reduction initiative, if added to current tobacco control programming, could secure personal and public health benefits not otherwise obtainable. Even a modestly successful THR initiative, if added to current tobacco control programming, could avert the deaths of 2 million of the more than 8 million Americans projected to die of a cigarette-attributable illness over the next 20 years. A highly successful initiative could save double that number and reduce the number of American smokers by 90% by 2035. I know of no other tobacco control policy option that could secure this level of public health benefit. In addition, experience to date has shown that e-cigarettes can be marketed in a way that attracts smokers to switch without attracting non-smoking teens to continuing use. Center for Tobacco Product Leadership, CDC, and the Surgeon General all recognize the continuum of risk, all recognize the potential personal health benefits of switching to e-cigarettes. Despite this, the Center for Tobacco Products seems not to have considered how such benefits could be secured in either the CTP research agenda or the proposed deeming regulations. I therefore urge the Center for Tobacco Products to play a lead role to determine the set of tobacco control policies and FDA regulations that would best enable us to capture the personal and public health benefits tobacco harm reduction can secure, and do so in a manner that will minimize, if not totally eliminate, potential adverse effects related to initiation quit rates. If, in the opinion of FDA leadership, this cannot be done without amendment of the FDA drug and tobacco laws, I urge the Center for Tobacco Products to work with public health, industry, and consumer stakeholders to secure the needed congressional action. The review I recommend should determine... Let me stop there then.
I'm Jim Bronner. I represent Cox Medical System in Southwest Missouri. I am a tobacco treatment specialist, and I have had over 130 complete the program going through that through the Cox Medical System. We have, of those participants, about 36% who come into the program using the electronic cigarettes. We only recommend the 7 approved nicotine replacement therapies currently, but I sincerely believe there's future hope with the electronic cigarettes to attribute to the cessation process in those individuals. The problem that these participants are experiencing when they are trying these devices, the closed system has worked better. They're purchased from a big box discount store and the open system from a vapor store. The participants' main comments about the devices were that there was more consistency within the closed system as it has evolved in their case. The open systems were not easy to draw. They're too large in most cases, and to get a seal, too much vapor causing cough, and within the system categorized experience, only one out of those 36% said that these were truly satisfying on a scale from very satisfied to very unsatisfactory. Also in our area, I have a survey done, 50.1%, and a group of 11 to 13-year-olds had parents that either used the electronic cigarette or some tobacco product. Of that population, 14% were currently using the electronic cigarette. My caution would be to ban that advertising extension to include these products until we can come to a better conclusion. The new data also, in our counties, we have a high rate in the Twin Counties in Southwest Missouri, the highest rate of pregnancy use of these devices and smoking in the state of Missouri. So it's been a great process, an educational process for me to really understand. And Marion O'Day, I want to ditto her comments. COPD, I have many in those classes, and they have tried to use these devices. The more we can get these regulated and understand that our consumers are who matter here. Thank you.
I'm told I have to wait. You can stare at me if you want. Or you can check your emails if you want to. Okay. Now that's me. So let's move on to the first slide. This is my disclaimer, and basically it's saying that if you have any problem with what I'm going to say, come talk to me. Don't call my boss. And also that I'm an intramural investigator at NIH. That means I have no influence on the funding opportunity and priority of NIH and the FDHTP. I do not manage any of those grants. So that being said, I want to provide a few perspectives for us to think about before we continue with the second day of the workshop. So first, what should we compare to when we evaluate e-cigarette? We're talking about the product safety and evaluation of it. A lot of research conducted to date compared e-cigarette to cigarettes and found that e-cigarettes are quote-unquote safer than cigarettes. Now, however, at a population level, almost everything is safer than cigarettes. Texting and driving is safer than cigarettes. It kills less people than cigarettes. Crashing a Boeing 747 every day for a year kills fewer people than cigarettes. So if we use cigarette as the safety standard, I think that's a way too low a bar. And for products that pass that standard, could still do potentially great harm in the population. Now then the question is, what should we compare to? Should we compare to nicotine inhaler as a standard, given it's kind of a product safe to be used for smoking cessation? I leave that for all of you to think about. Second, there was some discussion yesterday about comparing e-cigarettes and medication or medical devices, particularly speaking about the medication sold in the market before the long-term risks are being evaluated. However, there is a fundamental difference between medication or medical devices versus electronic cigarettes. Medications and medical devices provide benefit in spite of the risk, potential risks that involve in those medications. Versus e-cigarettes, if used continuously at its best, provide harm reduction. The analogy I would make is that it's like you don't owe any money, but you go to the bank to get a loan. Versus you already owe money, but then you get a loan reduction from the bank. In the first case, you have cash in your hand. In the second case, you don't. There's a qualitative difference in those two situations. I would say the qualitative difference also exists between medications and electronic cigarettes. So in that case, risks associated with e-cigarette use should be carefully evaluated, and maybe to a greater extent than the medical devices or medications. Just a suggestion. Third, how user use electronic cigarette matters. So this diagram, this one, shows that the red line shows those young adults who did not use e-cigarette at baseline, total for a year. They show a significant reduction in cigarette consumption. Now, the blue line represents those who currently use e-cigarette at baseline, and a year later, they have a slight increase in cigarette consumption. Now, we can all speculate why that happened, but one of the things that's possible is that the user behavior or how they use the product is not actually helping them to reduce their cigarette consumption. So one way to deal with it is that if we can regulate and standardize the use behavior through product design, that may be able to help and make the product actually helpful in helping people to cut down their cigarette consumption. Thank you.
I'm not seeing anybody else in that next speaker seat. So that means we have completed our speakers for the public comment session. Thank you very much for coming and giving those presentations to us. It is now time for a break. And so because we are a little bit ahead, that might mean we have longer for lunch or longer later in the day. Let's still go ahead and stick with our 15-minute break. Please. As Dr. Dermowitz said, if you would like, the restrooms are out to the right and around the corner, and there is a kiosk there for drinks or snacks. All right, and we'll be back here, let's say in 15 minutes, let's say at 20 till. Okay? Thank you very much.